work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com will simplify your postage needs and add valuable time back into your workday, so you have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off UPS and USPS. Send invoices, checks, certified mail, packages, and anything else you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. If you sell online, connecting with every major marketplace and shopping cart is easy. Plus, you can schedule package pickups through their dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with Stamps.com's Rate Advisor. Add more flexibility to your workday with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 and a chilly Tuesday afternoon, January 7th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The Biden administration is announcing an initiative to remove medical debt from the credit reports of millions of Americans. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, job openings rose last month, exceeding analysts' expectations, but hiring slowed down with fewer people quitting. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company. Jason, thank you for joining us today. And for many years, we talked about the great resignation, people changing jobs, chasing greener pastures coming out of the depths of the COVID-19 pandemic. And now we're talking about the great stay and the latest JOLTS report doing very little to jolt that particular narrative.
Yeah, so I think what we're seeing is there's still a good, healthy amount of job openings, but companies generally perform pretty well. And what they're doing is they're doing all they can to keep employees, whether that's paying them more, better benefits. They'd rather keep the person than have to go to the well and start from the process from scratch. So there's a lot of openings, but what you're seeing is people are trying to keep their people, and it's making it harder for people to leave.
Now, if you are have a half a mind to get a new job in 2025, let's say you've done all of the legwork, you've done the networking, you've scheduled the coffees, you've talked to people, you put your name out there. If you are looking, based on this notion of the great stay, and that companies want to hold on to the talent they have, do you want to fish in waters at companies that have a growth mindset in 2025? They want to add people because they want to expand.
Yes. 100%. I think what we saw, and I think when I was on your show a few months ago, the summer and the election were very slow. So the summer, you had people who weren't looking to leave and people were on vacation. Then you had people saying, hurry up and wait, let's see what happens with the election. So hiring, nothing much really happened at the end of the year. The beginning of the year is always the time where people start looking for jobs. And you'll see in the next few weeks, everybody's back from vacation, the election's over, we're all hoping interest rates continue to drop. So I expect this to be a very good time for people looking for jobs. I expect you're going to see a ton of job openings, and you're going to see companies aggressively looking to hire talent based upon the circumstances that I just mentioned.
And I'm already seeing some charts and graphs from economists on various social media services talking about how the hiring level now is reached a point where it was nearly a decade ago, that we're looking at maybe a 2015 or a 2016 style job market. People are finding jobs and the economy is adding jobs, but the rate at which people are quitting and are being hired is we've gone back a ways, back to the way things were before COVID-19.
Yes, the times during COVID, whether that was 21 and 22, we're never going to go back to those times again. That was probably the best time ever in the job market that we're ever going to see. So it wouldn't be a fair comparison to say, hey, this isn't what it was like during COVID, because I don't think that's ever going to happen again. But to have a healthy job market, as you mentioned, 2015, 2016, I think that's a much fairer comparison moving forward than ever comparing things to what it was like during COVID.
Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, removing medical debt from credit reports.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Many people face challenges with medical debt, and a new rule announced by the Biden administration today would remove it from credit reports. Let's discuss the potential impact with Amy Wilburn, who is a bankruptcy attorney with Gravis Law in Tacoma, Washington. Amy, thank you for joining us today. Now, how does this change the current reporting of medical debt on your credit report? Because there were some existing rules regarding medical debt and whether a collections agency could go after it. So how does this change the rule as it existed?
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for having me. This is now a rule that also applies to credit reporting agencies. They have to check on this. And the collection agencies now. Sometimes what has happened in the past is if you have medical debt, that debt gets turned over to a collection agency like Midland Funding or LVNV, and they then report it to your credit. And it can dock your reports significantly. It can affect housing, the ability to get jobs, all kinds of different things, higher interest rates. So this is really a benefit to everyone.
And of course, the thinking behind changing the rules is that your credit report assesses your risk as a borrower, and your ability to pay is determined by how much debt you have and how promptly you repay it. And it's one thing to go into debt to fund a luxurious lifestyle that you don't pay back. It's another thing to go into debt to fund a procedure that will keep you alive. So it seems like this new rule is lining up with that reality.
Well, exactly. No one asks to run to the hospital with appendicitis or cancer or any of those catastrophic things that might happen in our lifetimes. You don't really have a choice. You need to get that medical care. It's the number one reason that people file bankruptcy is that medical debt. There are some solutions before you get to the point of bankruptcy, but having medical debt should not get in the way of your ability to get hired for the dream job or to find appropriate housing for yourself.
We are talking about the new rule about how medical debt shows up on your credit report with Amy Wilburn, bankruptcy attorney with Gravis Law in Tacoma, Washington. Now, there have been some segments, and when we talked about this story this morning, my head immediately went to the John Oliver segment about a decade ago, where the show bought medical debt from a second-party company that purchased that medical debt for pennies on the dollar and then just simply forgave it. And how prevalent is that practice?
Of buying the debt from medical providers? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, buying the debt, and in some cases, charities or civic-minded organizations purchasing the debt and then just simply forgiving it for those who were affected by it.
I don't know a single person who has been fortunate enough to have that happen to them. So it is definitely not that common. I don't see it in the news that often. I think that's why the John Oliver segment got so much traction. But gosh, wouldn't it be nice if that happened more often?
And then in your experience as a bankruptcy attorney, this has got to be one of the more heartbreaking situations that has to come across the transom for you. And that is, you know, we talk about someone going into medical debt to fund a life-saving procedure for themselves or for a family member, and then they find themselves in financial dire straits. Before they get to a bankruptcy attorney, before they have to discharge their debt via bankruptcy, what are some things that people can do?
There are some steps that people can take. It does take some effort and some diligence. The first thing that I recommend that we just don't do is review your bills. You are entitled to have very specific medical bills. You want to make sure that there are no errors or duplicate charges. That happens all the time. You can also negotiate your medical costs rates with your healthcare providers. It's a little uncomfortable, but oftentimes if you have a good relationship with your doctor, they will negotiate that down for you. Another option, and this is one that's rarely used, is just about every hospital has charity care. So if you call their business office and ask for a charity care application, you can get part or all of your bill reduced or eliminated. Or you can call local organizations, Catholic Charities, United Way, HopeLink here in the Pacific Northwest. There are all kinds of different organizations that can help you with those bills. And then second to last is consider a payment plan. They will take a low payment plan because they want their money. If it goes to collections, you can negotiate it down for pennies on the dollar, knowing that they bought it for pennies on the dollar. And then last but not least is you might need to file bankruptcy and get that medical debt wiped out.
Amy Wilburn, bankruptcy attorney, Gravis Law in Tacoma, Washington. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a fast food giant unveils its new value menu.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago-based McDonald's debuting a new value menu as the fast food giant tries to lure inflation-weary customers back to the Golden Arches. Let's discuss the strategy with Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And the fast food space, I guess we now call it the quick service restaurant space, Izzy, is easily one of the most interesting and competitive sectors of the economy that we cover on this show. And it seems to be the name of the game in QSRs, whether you're McDonald's or someone else who swims in that pond, is the value meal, trying to get people back into your restaurant because you're offering the same thing for less. And what's McDonald's doing to get people back into restaurants in 2025?
Well, you know, what they're going to do is something that they couldn't have done 2 years ago with the crazy food prices and the instability of the pricing. And then last year, they reintroduced their value meal at, you know, $5 or so. Food prices are stable, so they're going to keep that, which is no small thing. And then they're adding other things to it, like buy one or buy a value meal and then add something to it for a dollar. So a lot of the add-ons is a very big thing because it does two things. Gets people to come in. They feel, their perception is, they're getting a great deal. And it's a great deal for McDonald's because it gets the customer to buy one thing and then spend an extra dollar or an extra $2 over that to increase those sales. So it's a whole different marketing in terms of value meals now.
And then with McDonald's reach, it has over 13,000 restaurants across the country, in the United States alone. So what does that say about McDonald's, whether it's a corporate-owned restaurant or a franchisee? What does that say about their pricing power that allows them to execute a value meal and make money while doing it?
Well, you know, they're really investing in their product. You know, they're going to buy the product a couple of months in advance, hold those prices, and, you know, be able to be stable in what may be an unstable market for the next, you know, 3 to 6 months, but they're going to be right there. And for their franchisees, this is a real positive because it's not reducing the price. It's coming up with ways to get people to come in and spend more. So it's a whole new way of thinking. And McDonald's is on track. I think they own 35,000 or so restaurants right now across the world, and that number will be 50,000 by 2027.
It seems like the consumer is telling two different stories. On the one hand, you look at the airline industry where budget carriers like Spirit are having a hard time because passengers are willing to pay for a more premium experience compared to what Spirit is offering. At the same time, though, it seems like the quick service restaurant space is offering more deals to get you in the door. Is this simply trying to appeal to inflation-weary customers, or are there struggles due to the fact that maybe the consumer wants, if they're going to spend that much money at a fast food restaurant, they'll go to a place that's a little more upscale?
Well, there is that factor. But McDonald's, you know, in quick service, they are innovative. They're, you know, going to be introducing, you know, more of the vegan type products because a lot of people are moving that direction, and they're going to increase. They'll have a giant burger at some point, right? Their burger is going to get bigger, so they're offering and reacting to the marketplace, and that's going to do them very well, especially with this. And you can see it with the growth that they're going to have in the next 3 years.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the Restaurant Coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, a look at the leading travel trends for the new year.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There's a major development at the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, a social media powerhouse changing its policy on content monitoring. It's Travel Tuesday, a look at some of the top trends for trips in 2025. Chicago Bears president Kevin Warren says the team remains focused on a stadium on Chicago's lakefront. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 12 points. The NASDAQ is down 238. The S&P 500 is down 32. We have mostly sunny skies right now in Chicago, 24 degrees. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan is planning to take the stand in his own defense at his trial for corruption. The Tribune reports his lawyers told the judge of their intention this morning. Prosecutors and defense lawyers are discussing the legalities and implications of the move at this hour. The trial has been running since October 8th. A social media leader is revising its policies about what you may see on your social media feeds.
Meta founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg said in a post that there will be a change in how content is monitored.
We're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X, starting in the U.S.
He said that will empower users to decide when a post is intentionally misleading or needs more context, and that allows for a broader range of perspectives. Meta says it will continue to focus on things like terrorism, child exploitation, fraud, or scams, but will take a more personalized approach to things like political content so that people who want to see more of it on their feeds can. Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
It's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist, CFRA Research in Allentown. Sam, thank you for joining us today. Markets are indeed lower this afternoon, and it seems like inflation worries and a little bit of tech are the reasons why.
Well, you're absolutely right, Rob. The Institute for Supply Management's survey of services came in much stronger than expected. And obviously that caused investors to be concerned because their price component, which is also another measure of inflation, came in hotter than anticipated. So as a result, the yield on the 10-year note has risen. And conversely, prices have fallen as investors worry that, gee, maybe the Fed won't even cut rates twice this year. Maybe it'll be one time or not at all.
Now, we're looking at the yield on the 10-year Treasury at 4.67% and change. And even though the Fed has cut interest rates, the federal funds rate, by 1 percentage point since September, this basically wipes out any impact that the Fed has had over the past 3 months.
You're absolutely correct. I think investors were very optimistic as we were waiting for the Fed to start their rate cutting program. But I typically find that having is less profitable than wanting, because once we do get the rate cuts, they might not continue in successive fashion. Or maybe we find that the Fed should have started cutting rates quite a bit earlier. So right now, we're not getting the kind of bounce that we saw leading up to the first rate cut. And also, we're just looking at the potential for higher inflationary readings over the next couple of months, undoing some of the downward trend in inflation that we had seen previously.
So does this mean that investors are facing a little or maybe a lot of uncertainty as we kick off the new year? I mean, we have a new presidency coming in, and we kind of know what the Trump administration is going to be like based on the on that first term, 2017 to 2021. But it still seems like there's a great deal of just uncertainty in the air, even though some of the questions we had at the end of last year, like who's going to win the election, have already been answered.
Correct. I think uncertainty will be the word, at least of the first half of 2025, because uncertainty because of the next couple of months worth of employment data as well as inflation readings. But then also, what about the new administration? Are the threats of tariff still going to be regarded as a negotiating ploy or something that is a fait accompli that is likely to happen anyway, and that could curtail trade between global nations? So I think there's a lot of uncertainty out there, and that's going to lead to a pickup in volatility.
And then very quickly, it seems like a lot of the run-up, the bull market that we have experienced over the past 2 years has been related to hitching your wagon to NVIDIA and the other tech heavyweights. If NVIDIA shows some signs of slowing down, what does that mean for equities writ large?
Well, you're absolutely right that technology has gained 30% per year for six of the last 8 years. And now people question how much further can this go on? So many people are beginning to add defensive holdings to their portfolios in the form of bonds or areas like food, beverage, tobacco, where the demand stays fairly constant. So I would tend to say that volatility could rise. We could probably see a digestion of recent gains, but this too shall pass.
Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist, CFRA Research in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, tracking the trends for vacations in 2025.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday. It's a new year and trends like off-the-beaten-track adventures, destination dupes, and coolcations are shaping how we see unique experiences in 2025. Joining us to talk about them is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, the website travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And before we talk about some of the travel trends for this year, it seems like the market for travel shows no sign of slowing down. 3 years after all the COVID restrictions were lifted and Americans decided to shake the sand off their boots and go somewhere.
That's true. We somewhat have a supply-demand issue in travel.
And one way that you can beat some of the high costs of premier destinations is to do destination dupes. We've talked about the practice of dupes on this program before, going to maybe another amusement park instead of Disney World, going to Oregon wine country instead of Northern California. And you can do that with destinations as well. And the interesting one that you pick for the United States is go to Memphis, Tennessee instead of Nashville.
Exactly. And another popular choice of travel right now is ski vacations, right? And opting out of places like Park City, where it's having difficulties with the ski patrol being on strike, and opting and planning trips maybe for next year where you venture to Japan for ski, or Europe, where prices are actually more affordable for skiing and you're going to avoid the high demand and trends for ski vacations in the United States.
Now, let me tell you, though, as a novice skier, is that before you take skiing can be a pretty expensive activity when you factor in lessons and equipment and all that stuff. So you have to kind of know what you're doing. But there are, if you're inside the Vail Resorts Network, even though they are currently dealing with the strike out in Colorado, You can your pass, if you buy a seasonal a lift ticket, you can use that in Japan. You can use that overseas because their network is pretty wide.
Absolutely. It's the Icon and the Epic passes. And if you know you're going to plan for a long extended ski vacation, or you're going to pair that with a follow-up weekend getaway of ski, it's absolutely advantageous to purchase those annual passes before they sell out.
And of course, I know I said we can use Memphis instead of Nashville as an example, but you should go to Memphis and see the Ducks at the Peabody Hotel, because that's always a fun daily tradition they have at the Peabody, which is also where Elvis signed his first recording contract. See, I've been there, Angie. I can give the tour. And then Coolcations, that's another one. So maybe you don't want to go to some resort or Caribbean island in July where you have to slather yourself in 7 bottles of sunscreen before you walk out of your hotel. Why not go someplace where you can pack a sweatshirt in June or July?
The baby boomers are onto this trend. Antarctica travel is very, very popular. It's certainly a bucket list trip. We're planning for 2026-2027 itineraries to Antarctica right now. And that's also a popular retirement gift for someone to finally have the time to do that bucket list trip. So it's a managing time and money is applicable with Antarctica. The Northern Lights is very popular. And believe it or not, you can see the Northern Lights in some U.S. destinations, but Finland is probably that popular destination where not only are you increasing the probability of Northern Lights, but you get to dog sled, and there's some amazing accommodations in glass igloos that are very popular.
Now, people inside a glass igloos shouldn't throw stones, by the way. So that's a little bit of an etiquette tip if you do go over there. I want to ask you very quickly, though, about these Antarctica trips. If you want to get in touch with your inner Shackleton and go see Antarctica, how does this work? If you want to give that as a retirement present, or if you want to go yourself?
Right. You do need to plan in advance, and there's different routes to get there. How much time do you want to plan at sea versus Silver Sea, for example, is a more luxury outfitter that actually provides the private charter plane to get you to Antarctica faster and in a way that allows you to avoid some of the motion sickness. And then it's choosing between, you know, an opportunity to maybe do it a little bit more rustically on a smaller ship where you're going to have a little bit more engagement with the other travelers. And also, you know, up close on a smaller vessel is another way to consider, you know, your adventure. And definitely, I really think that because you're going to have all of this time at sea and you're spending, obviously, you're in a more confined environment, it's very, very popular to bring a group together, whether it's people from your work, your church, or a professional association, a university. It does tend to lend itself to traveling with 4 or 5 other couples, or maybe going as a multi-gen family.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale. Find her online, travelbta.com. It's 12:45. Coming up next, we'll go inside the Bears' head coaching search and the quest for a new stadium.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Bears held their end-of-the-season news conference following a disastrous 5-12 season. The team's search for a new coach and status of a new stadium were among the topics. Let's bring in WBBM sports reporter and anchor Rick Gregg. It seems this is just a time of transition for the Bears, Rick, and it has been ever since they drafted Caleb Williams last spring. We have, hopefully, the franchise quarterback in place, and now you have to find a coach who can catapult the Bears up into the Kansas City Chiefs or Philadelphia Eagles realm and all the good stuff that flows from that. So what were your impressions of the news conference today?
First of all, the dreams of a Kansas City-type dynasty. But anyway, Rob, yes, you mentioned transition. I don't think the Bears thought going into 2024 that they were really in transition. They had the quarterback. They thought they had the coach. They thought they had the roster. And then they face-planted, as you mentioned, at 5-12. Now the question here, or at least for the last week or so, has been how much transitioning they will do. Like GM Ryan Poles, all accounts were that his job was safe, but we heard that again today, that yes, he is leading the search process to find the next head coach, but it's going to be a process. That's one of the things that we really learned today. They're going to cast a very wide net. They're going to turn over as many stones as possible, trying to avoid some of the mistakes from the first coaching search that Poles made when he admitted he maybe did not go as deep as he should have.
President and CEO Kevin Warren still confident, very confident, that they can build a stadium on the lakefront and do it sooner rather than later. And they're still looking at the lakefront, Rick, it sounds like, even though they actually own the land, the former Arlington Racetrack property in Arlington Heights.
Yeah, shovels in the ground in 2025 is what they have been preaching and promising and working toward. And in the ground, they would still like to be down at the museum campus, absolutely. Warren, of course, built or helped build the stadium in Minnesota, so he has a little bit of a frame of reference for how this process is supposed to go. He thinks they're right on schedule, and George McCaskey says he's not disappointed with the length of time that it's been taking either. McCaskey says he thinks they're in the right spot as well as far as the drawn-out process that is getting everybody who needs to buy in to buy in. However, they haven't shown any of that momentum publicly of late, certainly. Warren says this spring, this summer, you'll really start to see those efforts come to fruition, but I mean, all we can do is wait until it's in front of us, right?
Now, I was going to say, this indicates that maybe the Bears brass believes that they have an agreement on funding for building this new stadium, either on final approach or inside their pocket, and it will be revealed at some time at a later date. But right now, all we're talking about, all the evidence we have is that media availability last spring, where after it was done, it looked like they were celebrating on the 49-yard line.
I absolutely would not go as far as you're going, Rob, with that to say that you think they might have something done. I think they are closer to having something done. Maybe they're at the 30-yard line instead of the 50. And it did look like they were celebrating way too early back in March, and it turned out to be the case because as we are sitting here, we still don't have any concrete plans on a new stadium funding agreement. I think they think they're closer. I don't think they're there yet or even remotely there.
Rick Gregg, WBBM sports reporter and anchor, thank you for joining us with the latest from Hallis Hall on the Noon Business Hour.